Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this program, political scientist Cristóbal Rovira Kaltwasser on the economics of populism.
To what extent mainstream political parties are changing their economic policies because of the pressure that they feel from populist parties, either from the left, think about Podemos in Spain, or from the right, think about the Front National in France, for example.
Populism has become a bit of a buzzword of late. It's often at the very center of debates about politics and elections. But what about the economic implications of populism? That was the subject of a panel discussion at this year's American Economic Association's annual meeting. Cristóbal Rovira Kaltwasser was invited to join that discussion organized by the IMF's Antonio Spilimbergo. Kaltwasser is an associate professor in political science at Diego Portales University in Chile and co-author of Populism, A Very Short Introduction. I met him at the AEA conference in Philadelphia.
So before we get too deep into this conversation, how do you define populism? Because, you know, there are a lot of definitions out there.
I think this is an important question because you probably know that populism is getting more and more common. I mean, in the sense that many people in academia, but also journalists, are using the concept. And my interpretation is there is a sort of misuse of what is populism. So I have been doing research on populism in Europe and in Latin America, to a certain extent also in the US. So for us in political science, it's pretty important to develop a definition that travels to different countries and regions. So for example, many people that start to study Trump, they define Trumpism. But this would be maybe a good definition for studying the US, but it might not travel to study the Front National in France or to study Peronism in Argentina. So that being said, the definition that I use, but also many colleagues in political science, is that populism is mainly a specific set of ideas that consider society to be separated between two groups, the people versus the elite, and at the same time argues that politics should be an expression of the general will of the people. So in summary, it's the combination of two things. On the one hand, the moral distinction between the people versus the elite, plus, on the other hand, this very idea that politics is about respecting popular sovereignty or the general will of the people.
But you were presenting today before an audience of hundreds of economists at a convention, at a huge economic convention. What does this recent rise in populism say about the global economy?
Well, I mean, there is a tendency by some scholars to say that the economy is going to explain why we have the rise of populism. I personally think that the story is a bit more complicated. If you think, for example, about the Great Recession, so the economic recession that we have seen in the last few years, it has affected several countries across Western Europe. And in some of those countries, you see the rise of populist forces. Think, for example, about the case of Spain and Podemos. But you have Portugal, a country that has been deeply affected by the Great Recession, and you don't see the rise of populism. So I'm skeptical about thinking that once you have an economic recession, automatically the response is going to be a sort of populism. And the other issue that it's important to take into account is that many scholars, particularly in economists, they tend to argue that the rise of populism is related to the so-called modernization losers. So we have seen a process of economic transformation over time, mainly because of globalization. And because of that, you have certain segments of the population who have been not winning because of that. They have been losing. And those are the ones who are voting for populist actors. And the empirical data shows, again, that it depends on the countries that you're going to analyze. And it's a bit more complicated. So what I presented today, for example, and this is one of my favorite examples, if you think about populist radical right parties, which is a subtype of populism that combines populism and nativism, if you think about populist radical right parties in Western Europe, the party that gets the most votes, it's in Switzerland. And the economy in Switzerland, it's running perfect. I mean, unemployment very low, inequality, it's relatively okay, economic growth is very high. So why is it then that in Switzerland, you see a party that gets populist radical right party that gets almost 30 to 35% of the votes? So economic explanations can help us to understand something, but this is only a small part of the story.
Hmm. Okay, so if the economic aspect of this rise in populism isn't that obvious, and there's other factors driving it, how much do economists really need to know about populism?
Yes. Well, what it's also important to consider is, I said, economic explanations explain something. I think this very idea of modernization losers, it's interesting in another way. So what many economists think is, well, you have those who have been losing because of the globalization process and those who are going to vote for populist radical right parties. And this is not necessarily the case. But the modernization losers argument, to a certain extent, has some truth if you think that being a modernization loser is a subjective dimension. So by this, I mean that maybe you are in a very good economic situation, you belong to the middle class, but you feel subjectively that you have been losing. Although objectively, you have a relatively good job, you have a relatively good salary, but you have the feeling that the system is unfair. So being a modernization loser is not an objective category in this sense, whether you're really outside of the job market or not. It's whether you feel that the system is not treating you well. So going back to the case of Switzerland, how the hell do we understand that 35% of the population is voting for that party that has a populist message? A great part of that has to do that this segment of the electorate has the feeling that inequality is way too high, that immigrants are taking their jobs, although it's not true, but this is the feeling that they have. So in this sense, the subjective side of the of politics, so to say, is extremely important. And in fact, the data shows that it's relative deprivation and not absolute deprivation, the key driver behind those voters, so to say.
So inequality plays into this as well.
Exactly, because as I was telling you, if it would be absolute deprivation, you will think that those who are really suffering will vote for those parties. Those who are really suffering or really in poverty normally don't vote at all. So they're outside of the political market, so to say. But those who feel relative deprivation, so they have the feeling that, in fact, the system is treating them not in the right way, although they're in the job market, maybe in a sort of middle position, maybe a bit precarious, but again, they're not suffering in the sense that they don't have food in their fridges. It's not like that. But they have this feeling that the system is pretty unfair. And if you have a populist actor that is going to politicize that and develop the right frame, then you will have that those segments of the electorate, they will say, aha, this is the message that makes sense to me. So finally, there is a politician that is talking my language, so to say.
So the language is important, right? I mean, what, in your opinion, does it take for a populist leader to become popular?
Well, as I was saying before, we should be careful with the concept because populism is a combination. Remember, moral distinction between the people versus the elite, talking in the name of the people, I mean, in favor of popular sovereignty, so to say. If you look at speeches of politicians, so most mainstream politicians today will not use that sort of language. So in this sense, populist politicians are very peculiar because they will do this combination of this moral language and at the same time they will talk and they will favor popular sovereignty. So what makes these actors very popular is that populist politicians or populist parties, so to say, they're able to politicize certain issues that the establishment has overlooked. Maybe on purpose or not, this is a second question. Immigration is a key example. If you go to Europe, for example, many of those parties, populist radical right parties, are using this populist language to say immigration, it's a big problem. Mainstream parties forgot about that because mainstream parties on the right or on the left, so to say, social democratic parties or mainstream conservative parties are relatively okay with immigrants. But many people within societies are not okay with having too many immigrants. And those populist actors are very good at having the feeling of which are those issues that are very pressing for the voting public, and they're able to politicize that and blame the elites for being out of touch. And this is what makes these parties and these leaders very often very popular. And the second explanation is that what we call in political science the growing tension between responsiveness and responsibility. What happens because of liberal economic reforms is that international markets are extremely powerful nowadays. And if you are a politician, you need to be responsible to those international markets and at the same time to certain international institutions. Think about the European Union. But at the same time, as a politician, you need to be not only responsible to those institutions and the international markets, but you need to be responsive to your own constituency. And it's extremely difficult for politicians to keep the balance between being responsive and being responsible. So what happens nowadays, and this is pretty clear with the Great Recession, is that politicians very often tend to be very responsible. They undertake the reforms that the European Union says that you need to undertake as a politician or the international markets. But because of that, the electorate starts to get very angry at you. And because of this tension, then you have the possibility of the rise of populism.
So in the end, how important do you think it is that economists understand what is driving populism?
Well, I think it's important for several reasons. First of all, because populist actors are getting more relevant, but not necessarily because the amount of votes that they get. If you read, for example, the news last year, we have this impression that populists were winning elections all over the world. And in fact, if you look what happened, it's not necessarily true. Think about the Netherlands, for example. The PVV and Geert Wilders, populist radical right party, got around 20% of the vote. It's relatively high, but he was not necessarily the main winner. If you look, for example, at France, Marine Le Pen was articulating a populist message. She was not the main winner of the elections. If you go to Germany, AfD, Alternative for Germany, a populist radical right party, got into parliament with 15% of the vote. So they're winning to a certain extent, but it's a limited amount of votes. So normally in Europe, they get between 10 to 20% of the vote. So in this sense, I think that we shouldn't overstate how important these parties are, at least in terms of the amount of votes that they get. But here comes the second part, and this is those parties, those leaders are not necessarily successful because they win elections or get too many votes, but they can be very successful because they shift the political agenda, because they politicize certain issues that have been irrelevant in the past. These issues start to get very relevant for mainstream political parties. So what happens is, although these parties sometimes do not get too many votes, 10 to 20% of the electorate, they push mainstream political parties to adapt. Mm. And because of that, we are seeing the transformation of some mainstream political parties that are adopting some of the issues that these populist parties are politicizing, so to say. And here come the work of economists. So what's the impact of populism? I would say the impact of populism, on the one hand, is related to what they can do if they get into power. But looking across many countries, this is the exception rather than the rule. There are not many countries in the world, at least in the Western world, in which you will realize that populist actors get more than 50% of the vote. So Hungary would be an example with Orban. So you have there one case. So the case of Trump will be another case. But again, these are the exception rather than the rule. So one way of looking at that would be that economists say, okay, let's look at those cases in which a populist actor comes to power, and let's try to figure out which are the economic consequences. The other way of looking at that is what happens with mainstream political parties. And this is what I think it's a much more interesting question also for economists. To what extent mainstream political parties are changing their economic policies because of the pressure that they feel from populist parties, either from the left, think about Podemos in Spain, or from the right, think about the Front National in France, for example. So it's on both sides of the coin, and this is something that sometimes both economists and journalists tend to forget.
That was Cristóbal Rovira Kaltwasser, associate professor in political science at Diego Portales University in Chile and co-author of Populism, A Very Short Introduction, published by Oxford University Press. If you like this podcast, subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts. You can also now follow us on Twitter at IMF Podcast.